Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and soon to be Marty Parker here with you on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's live stream. Hey, Marty, you had to knock something out real quick, huh?
Yeah, apparently. I'm so glad to be back, man. It's been a while.
Well, that and you've been traveling the world, which we're going to work in at some point through the conversation. I'm so jealous. What was one of the most beautiful places you went to, Marty?
Mijas, Spain. It's a small town in southern Spain and a beautiful, spectacular. And it was small enough to sort of see it all.
Oh, man. Okay. We're going to dive more into all of that and really a lot more, folks, because today it's The Buzz, where every Monday at 12 noon Eastern time, we discuss a variety of news and developments across global supply chain and global business. News that matters is what we like to call it. And folks, The Buzz is powered by our friends at APL Logistics all month long in June. And if you don't know, if you're the three people out there don't know, APL Logistics is a global supply chain logistics provider specializing in order management solutions. They operate from 180 locations across 93 countries. And to learn more, visit aplogistics.com. Okay, so Marty, big show here today. We're going to be talking about some of the leading performers in industry and what they have in common. We're going to take another look at the growing supply crunch. I guess it's a supply chain crunch too in the memory chip world. Hey, what are some retailers doing with those tariff refunds? We're going to find out. Plus, we're going to discuss the power of the democratization of expertise, all that and more. And as if all that isn't enough, in about 15 minutes or so, we're bringing in a very special guest, Thomas Beal with Perfect Planner and UGA. It's going to be a great conversation. So, Marty, are you ready to go today on this big jam-up edition of The Buzz?
Let's do it. Really excited.
We are too. So, folks, buckle up for a lot to come here on The Buzz, powered by APL Logistics, right here today. And Trish is out there. Happy Buzz Day. Say hello. Let us know where you're watching from. Do that, folks. We like to connect the dots on this big, beautiful world that we're in. And she's already dropped a link to our friends at APL Logistics, so check that out. All right, so Marty, before Thomas joins us, we got three things to work through. And the first one is going to be our latest edition of With That Said, which published over the weekend. And we led off by sharing an interview with Laura Cesari, the one and only Laura Cesari, who is publishing her Supply Chains to Admire 2026 this week. Now, the research has gone on about 15 years or so. There's lots of nuggets. But according to Laura, get this, Marty. According to Laura, the leading organizations that she's, again, researched consistently over the years, well, they demonstrate five key characteristics. So I'm gonna write these off. Customer focus, leadership alignment, clear strategic direction, balanced performance metrics, and a culture of process innovation. So check out Laura's perspective along with a bevy of tools and resources and some terrific live shows. I think for the second week in a row, we have a live show every day this week. Man, it's a lot of work. So give it all a read. Let us know what you think. So Marty, did you get a chance to check out With That Said?
I did. And I told you before, I thought it was one of the best With That Said's that I've read. I talk extensively about how strategy determines supply chain strategy. You have to know that. And I love seeing research that supports the five things you mentioned. And if you're missing any one of those, your supply chain's not going to be successful and your team's not,
that's right,
not going to be successful.
I like how you said that, Marty. And also check this out. I got two more things on this first one, if that makes any sense. Check this out though. Her quote, "I would like to help spark a different conversation to help supply chain leaders drive value and sidestep the stupidity of existing conversations," end quote. Hey, Laura tells it like it is, Marty. Am I right?
Absolutely. And she was talking about reducing cost, right? It's all about reducing cost and value. You know value when a customer actually pays you for something. Right. And the supply chain teams that align with their sales teams, align with their marketing teams, align with their customer are creating that value. And I thought it was an amazing article.
Same. So folks, last things here. Number one, I want to share. So we always get a bunch of different comments on our newsletters, right? And John W. Hansen really brought it here. And folks, y'all can go check out the link and you can chime in and agree, disagree, you name it. But I'm going to scroll all the way down to John's final comment because he points out a trend that he's tracked for over the past 27 years. Quote, Technology is often credited for success and blamed for failure when the determining variables are frequently found elsewhere in the operating environment, end quote. Marty, hey, tech gets the credit, tech gets the blame. When I stop to think about that, I think he's right, huh?
No, absolutely. I talk about how I've never seen a technology project fail for technological reasons. It's always leadership reasons. And so, you know, we've really got to focus on root cause, and it's not the technology itself. And it's ridiculous to blame the technology.
I'm with you. I am with you. All right. So folks, go check out With That Said. It got Marty Parker's, the Marty Parker's rubber stamp of approval. So you know it's good stuff. Trisha's dropped link right there. So go check that out. And hey, Adam, terrific to see you, fellow Atlanta-based Dynamo. He says, happy Buzz Day, enjoying the podcast from Johns Creek, Georgia. And Marty, I think you know Adam. He's done big things with the ASEM Atlanta chapter, amongst other things. Have you ever, you've spoken there, right?
I know Adam extremely well. He comes to our supply chain advisory board meetings. And gosh, I don't even know how many years. It's 5-6 years I've known Adam well. And he is... super nice guy, super good looking guy too.
I mean, okay. I'm jealous.
He's probably going to kill me after that comment. But he always,
we'll see what he says.
He dresses so impeccably at our meetings. I'm always so impressed.
Same. I saw him and really the gang at Modex. Now, what a great industry event that was. All right. So one last note, folks, on supply chains to admire. We've got a jam up live show tomorrow. That's Tuesday, June 23rd at 12 noon Eastern time. Laura and friends are going to unpack all the research. There's 33 companies her and the team have identified as being the top real performers based on the data. And we're also going to talk about a terrific dynamic benchmarking opportunity. So come join us and bring your perspective, whether you agree or disagree. All right. So Marty, let's see here. Two more things to talk about before we bring on the Thomas Beal. Let's see here. I got a great image here. I love this because, folks, we got our own Dave Chappelle right here with us today, right? And we're going to talk about something that I don't think we've ever talked about on The Buzz, and that's stand-up comedy. So I bet you didn't know this, or you may have known this. Marty Parker gave a well-received stand-up show about a month or two ago. So Marty, two questions for you. Number one, how'd it go? Number two, what did it teach you about business or leadership or anything like that?
Well, it went extremely well, and you can ask Thomas his impression of it. And a lot of folks were shocked that I did about a 30 to 40 minute set, you know, having never done this before. What did I learn? We had a saying, Parkers persevere. And my wife says, you can do hard things. And this was a bucket list item for me. And Ross Kimball from Jury Duty, and he's also in the new live action Scooby-Doo, put me through a sort of a comedy boot camp. But you know what he really taught me in leadership? Scott, it was being present. Be in the moment. Don't be worrying about the past. Don't be worrying about the future. And so to me, some of the best parts of the show were where folks were making comments or the audience got involved. And I wasn't thinking about what I was going to say next. I was actually right there. And Ross, who I hope to have on the show with you again as another person one day, teaches that. His business is called Show Up Better. And he teaches salespeople how to be in the present moment. And
I like it.
I learned that in you know, doing this bucket list activity. And I'm not going to lie, it was hard.
I bet.
It was fantastic. I just loved every minute of it.
Well, hope you didn't have too many hecklers. But I know since Parkers do persevere, I know you could tackle each and every one of those hecklers. And hey, for whatever it's worth, I've had no less than 5 people come up to me and say, hey, I know Marty Parker's on your show at Supply Chain Now. He is so funny. So Marty, I'm telling you, you never know. You're going to have your own special on Netflix soon. But all kidding aside, really appreciate the leadership, really the human lessons that this really challenging experiment brought you. And I look forward to your next time on the stage.
Well, and I'm going to bring it into the classroom, Scott. I'm not sure how UGA will feel about that, but I've been experimenting with it at the beginning of class. And I think it really engages the students.
I like it. Okay. So folks, let's see here. Trisha has dropped, going back to the great live show we got coming up tomorrow, right? Supply Chains to Admire 2026 and Laura Cesari Live. You don't want to miss Marty Parker Live. You don't want to miss Lars Cesari Live. So go check that out. Adam says, hey, thank you, Marty and Scott. So he likes your kind comments there. Francis, hello, everybody. It's Buzz Day. Health Logistics watching from Nairobi, Kenya. Well, Francis, great to have you here on LinkedIn. Looking forward to your take here today on things we talk about. All right, so we're about to bring in Thomas Beale, but I got one more thing I want to share with folks. Folks, you know I am that supply chain nerd that loves a good case study. And this one here from our friends at EasyPost features a re-commerce marketplace that ships over 25,000 packages a day. Working with EasyPost, get this, they've saved over $2 million and have had 273,000 fewer late deliveries. And get this, it didn't require new carriers or renegotiated contracts. Not even any new headcount was added to the organization. To learn more via the link that Tricia has just dropped right there in the chat. All right, so Marty, thanks to you, we've got a great guest joining us here today on The Buzz, powered by APL Logistics. So get this, folks, Thomas Beale brings over 17 years of industry experience to the table, having reshaped operational landscapes, and he spearheaded strategic initiatives to revolutionize efficiency, drive down costs, and amplify profitability. Man, he's like the supply chain whisperer. A certified Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt and transformation architect, Thomas is distinguished for leading digital transformation teams and initiatives, fostering innovation, and orchestrating profound supply chain enhancements across Fortune 500 companies such as Mahle, Honeywell, and Whirlpool. Now, our guest serves as lecturer with the management faculty at the Terry College of Business, and he's an instructor in UGA's Terry Executive Education Department, but he's also the founder and CEO of Perfect Planner. So please join me in welcoming Thomas Beale. Hey, hey, Thomas, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Scott?
Wonderful. Great to see you. So I gotta ask you, Thomas, we were talking about Marty's stand-up, or should I say Dave Chappelle's stand-up a month or two ago. You were there in person. How'd he do?
I thought he did a really great job. You could definitely tell right away all the preparation he put into it. And his Elvis impersonations were next level.
Oh, Marty. Okay, we got stand-up coming to Supply Chain Now soon.
Yeah, and I sang Elvis Acapulco.
He did.
Acapella. Yeah. And I looked a little bit like Liza Minnelli and Elvis together, if you could imagine.
I'm trying to. All right. So here's the official fun warm-up question, Thomas and Marty. So we got a lot to celebrate today. It is today, June 22nd, is National Onion Ring Day. It's National Limoncello Day. And we're celebrating all those wonderful professionals that keep us cool because it's National HVAC Tech Day. So shout out to the one and only Mr. Chris Feather and his sons, Luke and Matthew, out in my neck of the woods. So it sounds like a great day at the office. You know, onion rings, adult beverages, and lots of cool temps. I'll take it. So Thomas, which one are you going to be celebrating the most here today?
You know, as much as I love lemons and lemonade, I think I'm going to have to go with HVAC day.
I'm with you.
Definitely.
I'm with you. And what's your temp? What's your AC set at?
Usually like 71 during the day, 70 at night.
Okay. All right. Man, Marty, he does like it cool. What are you celebrating the most, Marty?
Definitely Limoncello Day, because when I was in Spain, took a tour of the largest limoncello plant, had lemons about the size of my head, and they grind them up. You'll see a post from me, Scott. I've got some pictures, some videos. I'm excited about the post. Manufacturing is an important part of supply chain, and manufacturing booze is top of the list.
Hey, it's how we cope with all the Braves losses and my Clemson Tiger losses. Come on. Kidding aside. All right, really quick. Hey, the Doc Hollywood of Global Supply Chain is here. Fred Tolbert, the Fred Tolbert, folks. He says, Marty Parker and Thomas Beale, UGA Supply Chain Royalty. Well, Fred, it's been way too long. Great to see you here today.
Right back at you, Fred. Fred's some royalty himself. He just a comment about Fred. He is the most active member of our supply chain advisory board, and he teaches something like 5 students every semester as part of his group. Every 2 weeks, puts them in front of top supply chain leaders. Fred is just incredible.
All right, Fred, come on back. We got to get you on the upcoming edition of The Buzz. We got to catch up. All right, so Marty and Thomas, speaking of things we got to do, we got a lot to get to here today. So I want to go ahead and dive into some news stories here on The Buzz, powered by our friends at APL Logistics. And we're going to start with this interesting story that's probably going to impact all of us, I imagine. We're going to take a look at what's taking place in the memory chip sector. The Wall Street Journal reports that prices for memory and storage chips have quadrupled since 2025. and analysts project prices to continue to increase moving into 2027. Now, smartphones in particular use two common forms of memory. And this is really putting it simply for the sake of brevity, folks. DRAM, which runs apps, and NAND or N-A-N-D, whatever folks call that, to store photos and videos, amongst other things. Now, Apple CEO Tim Cook said price increases on their devices are unavoidable due to memory market conditions. Cook referenced his decades of time in electronic supply chain, over 40 years, I think, and said these price swings are like a 100-year flood. He's never seen it. A research firm, Tech Insights, and you can see the price journey as well as the estimates there on the screen. Research firm Tech Insights estimates, get this, $270 will be added on average to the next iPhone Pro model. Morgan Stanley estimates that it's going to be about a 15% increase on smartphones and PCs in the U.S. this year alone. More factories are coming online, and production capacity is expected to grow some 30% by 2027 for DRAM wafers in particular. But that, as you can tell with those estimates there, is still going to be expected to fall short of man. So, Thomas, that's not some of the good news I like to open with, but your thoughts there, my friend.
You know, when I was reading that story, and then there was a couple other, you know, stories and articles I had read. You know, what's fascinating is that this really isn't just a consumer electronics story. You know, it's an AI infrastructure story because the memory isn't just suddenly scarce because people are buying more phones. You know, I think it's really scarce from what I've read because the economics of AI are pulling more, you know, that memory capacity towards data centers.
Yep.
And so what you're finding is that, you know, these consumer electronics companies used to not have to compete with AI buildouts, and now they do. And so what you're finding is that memory's always, for at least for the past, you know, 10, 15 years, been somewhat constrained. And now it's extremely constrained.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot worse. Good stuff there, mm-hmm. Thomas. Marty, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting. Andy Grove from Intel said only the paranoid survive. And Intel and AMD, before NVIDIA, used to battle around chips. And it was, if you look at the case studies, it was about commodity. And so now with the shortage, just like with oil, we saw the same thing. Prices are going to go up. And we're seeing it in the inflation numbers. You're going to talk about an example, Scott. It's affecting all of us. I think it just ticked to 4.2, 4.3% inflation. You know, and I lived through much higher inflation back during the Civil War when I was a kid. But inflation is hard for everybody. But if you look at it from a company perspective, companies have to raise prices. Their margins erode. They get destroyed. They can only cost save to a certain point when their material costs are going up like Apple is seeing.
No, as both of y'all speak to, there's a variety of factors fueling this, right? Beyond our got to have it and got to have the newest one today, the demand, right? And then, of course, data centers are competing for so many different things, but especially technology inputs. And then, as Marty Pitt mentioned, my least favorite, and I'm not an economist, as y'all can tell, but my least favorite economic trend here this year has been the inflation. It's every time I step into a grocery store, which we're going to touch on in a second, I see it slap me in the face. But hey, nevertheless, there is good news if we go looking for it. But it'll be interesting to see how this electronics, some of these electronics trends and pricing trends continue to unfold. Folks, but that's just me and Thomas and Marty's take. Trisha's dropped the full article right there in the chat. Go give it a read and let us know what you think. All right. So we just talked about prices going up. Here's some good news about some prices going back down. So Marty and Thomas, I'm breaking records here because I haven't said the word tariff in like 72 hours. But that aside, Supply Chain Dive reports on what several retailers are doing with expected tariff refunds. BJ's Wholesale Club, which this article mainly focuses on, has already received tariff refunds and has used them to help reduce overall retail prices by around half a percentage point, trying to gain pricing ground on its key competitors. Quick aside, I'm Costco for life, BJ, for life. But following in BJ's footsteps, Walmart is planning to use a big chunk of its expected $2.4 billion in tariff rebates to reduce prices, as is, now this company's a new one for me, y'all might know it, ELF Beauty, or Elf Beauty, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, is projecting a $58.5 million refund check. They're going to lower prices with that, amongst other things. We were saying a minute ago, Marty and Thomas, we're talking about inflation. Well, folks, I'm a loyal Kroger shopper. We're in there 5 times a week where we live. I love the company. But yesterday, as I was in that store, I saw a can of cream of chicken soup, and it was $2.99. Oh my gosh. Mr. Craig Foran and Kroger team, I hope you are going to follow suit and lower those prices. Thomas, your thoughts on what BJ's and others are doing here?
So Scott, when you sent over that article on Friday, I read it last night, and I was surprised. You know, but I think it's a really interesting case where supply chain savings are being used as a commercial weapon, like that strategic pricing lever. So instead of simply just taking that refund below the line, you know, what BJ's is doing is that they're going to reinforce that value perception with their customers. And so I think that that's a really smart move, because right now consumers are still highly price sensitive, kind of like what you're talking about going into Kroger. And so, yeah, I applaud them.
Yep. I think that's a great point, and it delivers value on a variety of levels. Marty, what do you think?
So I've said it many times. I'm not a fan of tariffs for a bunch of reasons. It's a price increase on consumers. It doesn't help with competition. And keep in mind, we've already paid this. So it's not really a price cut. And we paid it. We paid it at a lower inflation level like 2 years ago. So the net present value for us, I don't care how much money they give us back. We are out of pocket by the 25%, 35%, 40%, 110%, whatever percent. You know, it changed every day during that. And frankly, I'm glad they're illegal. I think they're terrible for U.S. economy. I think they're terrible for supply chain and terrible for the U.S. economy. So world economy, I'm sorry. So, you know, I'm pretty clear in how I feel about them and the impact that they've had on all of us.
Breach, you and the Supreme Court are in the same camp. And largely I am too. I think, you know, and we've had this discussion numerous times, Marty. I think we really, and this is just my take, folks, I think we missed a terrific opportunity to be very surgical with how we apply vehicles and measures like tariffs to work on very specific products or relationships, instead of kind of what Marty's talking about, where you want a tariff, everything got a tariff. And I personally don't think that is sound policy, but it's just my take, folks. You may feel different. Thomas, I'm not even going to put you on the spot with trade policy unless you want to weigh in. And you can also say, I'm good. Thanks. We'll move along.
I'm good right now. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I should have said.
Yeah, this is good. Folks, Tricia is dropping a link, as she always does, to that great Supply Chain Dive article. Folks, if Supply Chain Dive is not on your reading list, that and really all the Dive publications, you got to add it to do great stuff. All right. I'm going to pop this up. Here recently, I shared some data nuggets on the supply chain workforce and then some last week on LinkedIn. And I let off with this factoid here that may or may not surprise you. So Talent Traction says that we've seen a 31% year-over-year increase in demand for supply chain talent in 2026. Now, if that's true, of course, it comes on top of the talent deficit we had coming into the year. So it only got bigger. Other things we shared on this same post here is Gartner says that demand for supply chain jobs requiring AI skills, well, that's increased 387% since Q1 2023. Deloitte research shows that globally, we're going to be short just shy of 2 million manufacturing workers by 2033. And here's an interesting workforce data point that I bet is not on a lot of folks' radar. It's just my prediction here. I could be wrong, but a lot of folks aren't tracking this. Reuters reports that 41% of construction workers, that's right, 41% are expected to retire by 2031. Of course, that's going to worsen shortages in build out such as logistics facilities, manufacturing plants, those data centers that folks have all kinds of opinions on. Where are we going to find all those people? So Thomas, your thought on that or any of these data points, my friend?
Well, you know, I really have two thoughts. So I saw that post, Scott, and I thought it was fantastic. The first one I'll touch on is the labor shortage problem. And really what jumps out at me is that we keep talking about labor shortages, you know, as if this is just purely a hiring problem. And I don't think it is. I think it's also a work design problem. You know, so if Gartner's right about AI skill demand and supply chain being up almost 400%, and that half of all the new warehouses being built by 2030 are going to be robot centric, then the real issue isn't just, do we have enough people? I think it's really focused on, are we redesigning jobs and workflows for a very different operating model? Mm. So the problem to me that really stands out is that I feel like, and I would have to prove this with data, But companies are still training people for the old style of work while buying technology for the new work.
Thomas, I'd love to see that data too, but my gut tells me you're absolutely right, right? We're talking out both sides of our mouth, right? We're leading digital transformations, but we're still acting like it's 1982 in some aspects of our operation. Marty, your thoughts on these workforce nuggets?
Well, it's great for my kids. And Thomas and I, along with the illustrious Fred Tolbert, are working on the supply side of this equation. Fred has been after us for many years to make our supply chain program a full supply chain degree, which we're going to do very soon. Awesome. And that's going to add, you know, folks coming into it and wanting to grow into that career, which is, as we all know, a fantastic career. The students have great starting salaries, and they have huge long-term prospects in the company. They can move into all kinds of different areas in the supply chain, and even outside of the supply chain as they do that. So to me, and there's opportunity, right? Because AI has been killing computer science jobs, as an example, and a lot of those students will start pivoting over to our side of the world.
Love it. Well, two thoughts, both y'all's comments. Number one, hey, kudos to what you both and Fred and really everyone at the University of Georgia is doing, and not just from a supply chain standpoint, but really in business and leadership education. So folks, make sure UGA is on your radar. And then secondly, Thomas had mentioned operating models, right? And folks, you're going to hear a lot more about that phrase. It's going to be maybe the ecosystem. And when ecosystem hit the scene, it hit everybody's conversations. Well, I would argue these operating models is going to be very similar. And if you listen or watch The Buzz regularly, you know, a few weeks ago, we pointed to research that shows, and don't hold me to this if I get it wrong a little bit, but basically a survey of hundreds of supply chain leaders. Last year, they said, I think 14% were reinventing their operating model. To this year, like over 72%, Thomas and Marty. So hopefully that will mean, you know, Thomas, going back to your point, that we are going to be redesigning roles while we redesign the operating models, but there's no guarantees. We shall see, won't we, Thomas and Marty? Go ahead, Thomas, go ahead. You're going to add something.
You know, when I was looking at the 41% of construction workers that are going to be retiring, you know, we've got to do something about this. And I know the technology is, you know, a big appeal for a lot of executives, but I think also the statistics that stuck with me was that there's a big gap between executive confidence and then the actual workforce capability.
Yep.
So, you know, you have all these companies out there saying we're ready for AI. And what I think that really means is we bought some technology.
Yes.
And so that's very different from having your employees and your workforce ready to work in an AI-enabled environment.
Well said, Thomas. And, you know, we're already feeling that in an adjacent area, I think. Folks, have you ever tried to find a plumber? Or an HVAC, a reliable HVAC, or, you know, other more services related, it's tough to find. You know, we were trying to get our fireplace cleaned one winter, Thomas and Marty, getting ready for, like, you know, weekend fires and stuff. It took me months to get on the calendar for folks like that. And that's why I appreciate the folks like Chris Feather out there. But Marty, you were about to comment, I think, on what we heard there from Thomas before we move on.
Yeah, I would add, too, that it's dynamic. And what I mean by that is, you can build buildings and houses in a factory now. Germany has been building, because of these labor shortages, has been building homes for probably 20 years. 20% of their residential construction is done in a factory using robots. So it's absolutely dynamic. And we saw everybody went into computer science degrees because they were encouraged to do so. And now the jobs aren't there. There will be a similar thing in supply chain, frankly.
Yep.
We'll have a flood of students going into it. And it'll, you know, it's a pendulum. It'll go, yes, back and forth, because people will automate things as they need to. They have, yep, to stay in business.
That's right. Well said, Thomas and Marty. Okay, we got a whole bunch more to get into. But really, first, I want to share this message from our friends at APL Logistics. Folks, you know, the biggest supply chain problem isn't always visibility. We're solving that problem over the last decade or two. It can be, though, the gap between the plan and what the network can really deliver. Execution gap is the space between a supply chain plan and its actual financial outcome. It's what happens when a carefully built strategy for inventory, transportation, and distribution all fail to produce the margin, working capital, or service level results it was designed to deliver. That's where APL Logistics steps up. APL Logistics helps customers close the gap between what the plan says and how operations can actually deliver, because insight matters. Execution moves the business. Hey, click on the link to learn how APL Logistics can help you build a resilient supply chain that sticks to the plan. And Trish is dropping that link right there. All right. So, Thomas, get ready. Because me and Marty are going to dive into the Thomas Beal chapter here on The Buzz for June 22nd. Gosh, can't believe we're almost in July. So, Thomas and Marty, I want to start by talking about this notion of the democratization. I knew that word was going to get me eventually. The democratization of expertise. You know, AI is delivering that, amongst other things. This article from Business Insider offers up an interesting use case and features some friends of the show too. It's focused on a yard logistics company named Laser Logistics, right? Who some might say is attempting to take your company's best manager and clone them. Company's Uncle Phil AI is attempting to take institutional knowledge inside the heads of humans and make it accessible across the organization. In this case, the name Uncle Phil, what comes from the industry guru Phil Newsom, who is Laser Logistics COO, right? They want to take what Phil knows, and he's accumulated over some four decades, and share it with 750 sites. Our friend Bart DeMonk is quoted in an article. He says that the yard is one of the last parts in the supply chain world to get a technological upgrade, unlike warehouses and factory floors. He says, quote, "We have very clear KPIs on the warehouse. We have very clear KPIs on transportation. No one has a KPI on the yard," end quote. So we may all have more Uncle Phil or Aunt Sally or Cousin Toya AIs in our future. We'll see. Thomas, your thoughts here, my friend.
I love this article. I think, to me, one of the most powerful future applications of AI is helping us scale this expertise, you know, taking this process knowledge and making it available to the entire organization or industry, however we want to do that. And, you know, I see this as the competitive advantage of the future. Mm. You know, when I think about what hurts the most, it's when our best analyst walks out the door or our best leader walks out the door and they have all this process knowledge and expertise. And they were pretty much the only one who really understood every facet of a function or a process. And so, you know, the future, in my opinion, is these organizations need to find a way to capture and digitize that process knowledge. You know, it'll be game changing.
I largely agree. Marty, are all your friends this agreeable, like Thomas Beal?
Yeah, Thomas is agreeable and super smart and super nice.
Yes, I agree. Your thoughts?
So a couple of thoughts. We're going to talk later about how planning, especially in manufacturing, I've been into several companies where if their planner got hit by a car, they're bankrupt. Literally every bit of planning is in their head as they're trying to put together, you know, 25, 30 different reports in their ERP. And so like Thomas, I agree. If we could get that institutional knowledge automated in some way, it's awesome. But I think the most important thing would be to clone Max Headroom Scott Luton for a podcast. And I think St. Thomas, I think St. Thomas and Max Headroom Luton would be two of my favorite bots. Uncle Marty, I think that's scary, right? But you guys, I would love to have bots of you two guys.
You know, they could probably do it better. And they definitely would pronunciate things better. Their jokes would be funnier. Marty, I can see it now. I can see it now. Work to that. We'll work on that in the Skunk Labs. But Marty, I tend to agree with you and Thomas here, and it really is fascinating. And, you know, I also agree with Bart's take. You know, the yard, as it were, it really has been maybe, arguably, one of the last vestiges of you know, not having as much technological innovation applied to it. But that is changing. So, folks, check out this great read in Business Insider.
Scott, and one other quick comment. I had a student doing an internship out in a yard, and there were like 200 trailers full of stuff. And the way they kept track of it was with sticky notes and pieces of paper. And it had literally millions of dollars in inventory sitting out in a yard. And the big technological upgrade was to move it to a spreadsheet. So,
oh my gosh.
You know, I really think, and this was just a couple of years ago. So I really think we're in for a revolution here.
I'm with you. You know, your anecdote reminds me, we've got a parking yard not too far from where we live here in Walton County. And it's filled in part by trailers. And one trailer has been there for almost the 15 years we've been out there, both doors have been open and there's just a bunch of junk hanging out. And I'm just waiting. I'm like, come on, can't we do better? Isn't there at least a spreadsheet over there that can fix that? I don't know. All right. So Marty and Thomas, speaking of stickies, I think you are just talking about this next story. Look at this. That is a wall full of stickies. We're going to be talking about supply chain decision intelligence via Jim Frazier and Logistics Viewpoints. Jim says, quote, in this great read, we're going to be dropping a link to it right there in the chat. Jim says, quote, in most enterprises, the operational challenge is no longer simple visibility. Companies can already see more than they could a decade ago. A harder problem is deciding what matters, what does not, and what should happen next, end quote. And that's where decision intelligence, of course, comes into play. We had the uncle of DI, speaking of uncles, Marty and Thomas, we had the uncle of DI on The Buzz a couple weeks ago. We're going to have to drop that link in the chat. Jim goes on to describe the decision intelligence layer in technology as the connective tissue between all the fragmented systems that can be found in industry, all those silos, and the real operating decisions that must be made all day long by both humans and machines, for that matter. So Thomas, this is right up. I bet I was hitting on one of your passion bones, maybe a couple of them, with this article here. Your thoughts?
You know, I love decision intelligence. It's what we are trying to do at Perfect Planner, you know, where we're turning fragmented signals into clear action. You know, I like to say it's the straight to execution approach, right? Mm-hmm. Where we're able to provide that direction. You can almost think of it as like a shopping list if you're going to Publix and want to shop. You know, because most of these companies, they have their ERP systems, planning tools, visibility platforms, dashboards, you name it. But the problem isn't the lack of data. It's knowing what matters and what should happen next with that data. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the opportunity is really moving beyond reporting into a layer that helps us make better decisions. And so you're seeing that this is what is starting to come out. More and more solutions are in this space.
Well said, Thomas. And, you know, I use this backdrop of sticky notes as kind of an antonym to modern decision intelligence. Your thoughts, though, Marty?
Yeah. So Thomas has forgotten more about this than I'm going to ever know. But I would add that think about how hard it is for a company to get their CRM and their ERP and their various spreadsheets and all the other, you know, their control systems, their robots, to talk to each other. That's intra-company. But many of these companies have done acquisitions over the years and have multiple ERP systems that don't talk to each other. And so I agree, and Thomas will get into more detail, but we've got all of these legacy systems inside the company that we bought over the years with acquisitions, and we've got to coordinate those in a really smart way to make better decisions. And that goes back to the process. And that's what Thomas is just an expert in.
I'm with you. And, you know, he mentioned Perfect Planner. We're going to touch on Perfect Planner in a minute, folks. And before I ask Thomas my next question, I want to make sure, folks, Trisha's dropped a link to this article focused on supply chain decision intelligence, as well as the last one where we were talking about yard logistics and a much better approach. But picking up where Marty left off there, Thomas, you know, as I mentioned when I introduced you on the front end, you've spent years doing big things at companies like Whirlpool and Honeywell and Mahle, which was new to me earlier today. Don't judge, folks. But what's the biggest planning challenge that manufacturers still haven't solved, Thomas?
I think the biggest planning challenge, Scott, is that manufacturers still haven't solved the decision support problem. It's all about DI. Right. Years ago, I remember a Honeywell executive saying that we need both tactical analysts and strategic analysts. And I remember thinking, why? You know, that's a little backwards, in my opinion. Not to knock him, but the nature of the work was there, which is why he was feeling that way. But if the body of work is that overwhelming to understand all these signals, trying to decipher what I need to work on, then the answer shouldn't be splitting the role and creating more labor. It should be, let's remove the waste from the role. And all this administrative and analytical work is just waste, you know, especially with the technology that we have today. So most analysts spend 75% of their time, of their day, on administrative analytical work.
Yep.
Just let that sink in. Like, what are we doing? And it's not executing. It's not really adding any type of value because of that. And so if we were able to strip out that waste and give them better decision intelligence, direct them and what they need to do and the actions they need to take, instead of having them hunt around for it, then they can handle both the tactical and strategic aspects of the job. And, you know, if I was a betting man, I think the result would be that a lot of these downstream problems would be resolved.
Thomas, I agree with you once more. You know, two big things you said there I agree with, Marty. I'd love to get your take here. Number one, a lot of the tedious aspects of the work that humans are still performing in the planning function and elsewhere, so much of that can be offloaded, right, to free up their time to focus on more fulfilling work that takes advantage of unique human skill sets. And then number two, you shared something number two, and I agree with you. I'll think of that in a minute. Marty, I need to take more ginkgo biloba these Monday mornings. Marty, what'd you hear there from Thomas? And what do you think that we're still not solving effectively when it comes to planning, especially manufacturing?
So I think Thomas really hit the nail on the head with decisions. Not making a decision is a decision.
That's right.
And so many companies just keep discussing the same things again and again. I remember being in meetings for an hour, and I would do the math and say, we just avoided saving $19,000 with the last hour. We just wasted not making a decision. And I think that's one thing that tools like Perfect Planner are doing, is putting it in a decision framework so that we can, you know, go ahead and make that move. One of the most powerful tools. And by the way, you didn't mention this, Thomas is teaching people how to be master black belts. So he has got to be the smartest process guy that I know. And so if I simplify those processes, I make those decisions clearer. I use Pareto to execute the 20% of things that result in 80% of actions, then I don't stay stuck making a decision by not making a decision. I can't tell you how many companies I've been in that are just paralyzed by that because there's too much data, there's not enough wisdom, there's too much information, it's not well organized. And planners do this every day, and it's in their head. And the only call that a planner gets is when something's screwed up. Nobody calls a planner and says, wow, thank you, 98% of your job doing it right. It's the 2% that the planner gets called. Oh, you did, you know, you ran out of this thing. And usually it's because of this lack of process view, as Thomas mentioned.
Yeah, we got to fix that. And you know, to both y'all's points, I was just on a YouTube channel, a new one for me earlier today, and it was a former CPA that left the organization because all they had him doing was these tedious tasks that modern day AI can do. It was not fulfilling. Now he's driving a truck. He's loving it, right? There's other buckets of people, but there's two buckets of people, right? There's folks that will get tired and will leave the organization because of all the tedious work. But then there's also an equally dangerous bucket where folks they cling to that, you know, because they fear change. They want to keep doing that. And unfortunately, as industry continues to evolve, you know, that leads to not so nice list of options, right? We got to be willing to change, including the things we like and the things we got to learn to like. But Thomas, I'm going to ask you, we've talked about Perfect Planner a couple times. Tell us what Perfect Planner does in a nutshell.
So the 30-second elevator pitch, right?
All right.
So Perfect Planner is really just a decision intelligence platform for MRP, make the stock, repetitive manufacturer. You know, so the ones that are using, that have a lot of purchase parts and they're using bill of materials. And it was really specifically designed for the planner buyers, you know, what a lot of manufacturers will call a material planner. And so when we started the company a few years ago, you know, we wanted to create a product that was achieving a simple goal. You know, we wanted to create a standardized, proactive, and scalable planning process for the entire manufacturing sector. And so now what we do is our platform acts as kind of the decision layer above the ERP and MRP system. So we're going to take those data and we actually turn it into prioritized comprehensive to-do lists for those planners.
Mm.
And so instead of them having to navigate thousands of exception messages, reports, spreadsheets, system screens, now what we can do is we can prioritize their day. We can look for shortages, inventory risks, other planning issues, 6-month horizon. And again, they walk in and get straight to execution. And that really allows them to have about 4 times the amount of time each day to be adding strategic value and eliminating tactical issues before they become emergencies.
Thomas, very nice. And folks, if you want to learn more about Perfect Planner, Trisha's going to drop the link here, but perfectplanner.io. And Marty, I know you want to comment, and really quick. Hey, Glenn from Washington, D.C., great to see you. Give us your take on anything we're talking about here today. And as promised also, Trisha dropped the link to perfectplanner.io. Marty, you know Perfect Planner. I think you've seen it in action a little bit. Your thoughts on what Thomas shared?
So it's bringing a bit of PTSD. Early in my career as a process engineer working in a factory, and I became the backup planner. And I remember it was just treading water. I mean, you just literally had 87 balls in the air as a juggler. And if you made any kind of mistake, the whole thing just came cascading down. And yep. There was one person that I could ask, hey, should I do this? Should I run this report? Should I do this spreadsheet? Whatever it is. And I think what Thomas and team are doing is moving it to a more proactive approach that could actually drive business success and add value, which we talked about before. Let's add value, let's not just juggle 8,000 balls in the air.
I'm with you. Well, speaking of what we've been juggling with for decades, we've touched on this spreadsheet. So Thomas, industry, we've invested in billions, if not trillions of dollars in all sorts of platforms, ERP, MRP systems and the like. Why are we all, especially planners, to some extent, living in spreadsheets?
Yeah, that's a great question, Scott. I think the truth is that the spreadsheets are filling a gap. And I don't think they're the disease, although a lot of companies will be like, we want to get away from the spreadsheets. I think they're a system or a symptom of the system. And so, you know, what we have is we have ERP systems that are just systems of record. I don't think they were ever really designed to fully solve, you know, the planner's day-to-day decision-making. And so, you know, what they're good at is, you know, storing transactions, keeping parameters, they'll have outputs. But if we need planners to quickly understand what matters most right now and why it matters, and then take actions to address those things, these systems were not designed for that. So what you have with the planners and why we pay a lot of money for these planners is that we need that process logic to either be already in their heads or to be developed over time, because they're using the spreadsheet as layers to help prioritize that work or combine data from multiple sources, as Marty was talking about, all these different systems, or apply business rules or logic. And so that's what they use the spreadsheets for.
You could have a whole spreadsheet series to really get the stories of the good, the bad, and the ugly while they're still around out there. We'll have to think about that. That may not be a real popular series. It may not be. I don't know. But Marty, I want to get one more question out. I want to get both of y'all to peer deep into your crystal ball and predict the future. I'm going to start with Thomas here. So Thomas, if we think 5 years from now, so what's that, 2031, what will the planning organization of 2031 look like, Thomas?
You know, I think in the next 5 years, what you're going to have is that the leading organizations are going to have a lot of this administrative and analytical work automated or systematized. And so then if it's planning, I think that that role is going to shift from being a data wrangler into being a decision maker, and then also using those insights to drive strategic value. I think that's what we're going to see by 2031.
Well, I wonder if data wranglers will wear red bandanas like the Cowboys and what's that great Western movie? All right, so Marty, same question. What will planning organizations look like 5 years from now?
One word, integrated. And that's where the spreadsheets are. I was in a company once that had 40 pieces of software to run the company. And everywhere there was an interface, there was some sort of custom code and or spreadsheets. And so now if I have this AI interface that's able to sort of look at all of those processes at the same time, which is part of what Perfect Planner is doing from both the reporting and process perspective, then I'm integrated. And that's the holy grail because, you know, we know this, CRMs have nothing to do with the ERP. We pretend they do, but they don't. And so we've got all this forecast data. We've got all this customer data that isn't talking to our planners. It isn't connected to our inventory management. And that's what I see in 5 years. And I'm excited to see that too, by the way.
I like it. I am too. We live in exciting times. We really do. Challenging times, but exciting times. Hey, Dr. Valerie Fuller, great to see you. Says, Perfect Planner sounds amazing. I'm with you, Valerie. Great to have you here today. And McLean Babcock. Still amazed I get to learn from these two gentlemen on the world of supply chain. Keep it up. McLean from UGA. I think someone just got some extra credit, McLean Babcock. I love it. Great to have you here. And that really, you know, we could talk about supply chain planning and innovation and technology. We'll have to have you back, Thomas, and talk more about the Perfect Planner journey. But folks, you can learn more at perfectplanner.io. But I want to ask, you know, both of y'all are doing really noble missions because you're in classrooms and elsewhere helping turn on the light bulbs in our bright, bright now generation, right, folks? Either in the industry or they are about to get in industry, or maybe they've been there for a couple of years or getting, you know, four-year degrees or advanced degrees. And you're really just like McLean here. You know, you're helping them really piece everything together and figure out what they want to do and then some. Thomas, how do you see the professional education space evolving over that same 5, 10, 15-year time frame?
You know, Marty and I and Troy and our group over there at UGA, you know, we're a really close-knit group. And Derek, we talk about this quite frequently. What can we do? And I think the future of education is going to move from knowledge transfer to capability transfer. I talk about capability a lot. You know, for a long time, a lot of education was built around transferring knowledge. We're going to give you the theory and, you know, we want you to have that knowledge and you should be able to use that when you get into your career. And I think that that still matters. It absolutely is critical. But I think a bigger need moving forward is helping people apply those concepts, all that theory that they learn in messy real world environments. And I hats off to Marty and everything he's done with the Supply Chain Advisory Board to make that happen. Get, you know, our students into internships. We really work hard to do that so they can get that experience, but also bring it into the classroom so they can use real data. In our supply chain analytics class, we're using real data from real companies solving real problems. And yep. So if you think about supply chain, you know, those questions that we're going to ask aren't going to be clean. And so that's what we need to prepare the students for.
Yeah, I'd add it's all about application. I used, on my recent epic trip, I used Claude to run the dishwasher, Claude to operate the oven, Claude to turn on the microwave, because think of the language barriers. Claude decided where we were going to go, what our activities were going to be. It optimized how we were going to walk around the city. Think about that for a minute. I didn't have Claude on my last trip, and this trip was so much better, so much more efficient. Mm. It allowed me to take two-hour naps in the middle of the day, which I couldn't do. So it's all about application. Just like Thomas said, if we can teach our students how to practically use these AI tools in their jobs when they go in to make things better, then we will have done our job. And I would throw robotics in there too, but that's a whole nother podcast.
Yes, it is. Marty and Thomas, we got so much more to talk about. I hate that our time here on The Buzz powered by APL Logistics is almost at a close. But you know what? I know both of y'all got big afternoons, you know, including maybe a two-hour nap if you're lucky, Marty. We'll see. All right, so let's do this. You know, folks, we love sharing resources beyond the great resources that Thomas and Marty are. We're going to make sure y'all know how to connect with them in just a minute. But the resource hub over at the relatively still new supplychainnow.com. We've got a variety of blog articles and white papers. I bet we load three or four new ones each week, including one of these newer ones here, which offers terrific perspective from my friend Richard Howell with SAP. He shares some intriguing key takeaways from SAP Sapphire 2026. And by the way, make sure you catch Richard's podcast, The Future of Supply Chain. He's doing good work. Let's make sure we can connect folks with Thomas Beal and Marty Parker. So Thomas, how can folks track you and the Perfect Planner team down?
Well, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can also go to our website at perfectplanner.io. If you want to know more information about Perfect Planner, you can email us at info@perfectplanner.io. And we would love to connect. And I would love for you to even, you know, get involved with all the great things we're doing there at UGA.
All right, folks, Trisha's on it, dropping Thomas's LinkedIn, dropping again, perfectplanner.io. And Marty, same question. If it's not at a comedy stage near you, how can folks track down Marty Parker?
Same thing, easiest on LinkedIn, but you can also Google Marty Parker UGA, and that brings up all kinds of stuff I want you to see, probably some things I don't want you to see. But yeah, we won't be saying Google in 5 years, but right now you can Google me, see me on LinkedIn.
So true. And folks, if you heckle Marty Parker, you will have a price to pay I'm going to put that out there. All right. So I want to thank our esteemed panel here today. I really enjoyed Thomas Beal, founder and CEO of Perfect Planner. He also serves over at the University of Georgia. Thomas, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
You bet. You bet. Stay out of that Chattanooga traffic, okay, my friend?
I'm going to try. Okay. I'm going to be moving to Athens is what's going
okay.
happen.
All right. We'll connect and break bread soon. And, of course, my terrific co-host and overall industry dynamo, comedic dynamo, too, Marty Parker. Marty, always a pleasure, my friend.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Scott.
You bet. And we also dropped Marty's LinkedIn profile, so go check that out, folks. Hey, big thanks to our friends at APL Logistics. Be sure to connect with them, aplogistics.com. Big thanks to Amanda and Tricia behind the scenes, making production happen each and every time. And most importantly, big thanks to our global audience for tuning in. Though we couldn't hit everybody's comment and question, y'all keep the feedback coming. Okay, folks, hope you enjoyed the show today. You know the homework, take one thing. And Thomas and Marty gave you lots of options. Optionality is a great thing. Take one thing they said here today, do something with it. Put it into practice. Deeds, not words. That's how we're going to keep transforming global industry and leave no one behind. And with that said, on behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now team, Scott Luton challenges you to do good, get forward, be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.